Okay, let's start. This is Barry Teichner of the Oral History Project. I'm at WHA. Today is May 12, 1995. I'm with Gilda Hudson Winfield.
That's correct.
A former UW student and an athlete on the track team in the 70s. We're going to talk about her her involvement with the track team and her current involvement as a member of the athletic board. When did it first come? Tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you ended up coming to Madison.
Very good. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana, originally. I, believe it or not, wanted to see snow, and that was my reason for choosing Madison. And I certainly got my wish fulfilled from that perspective. I came up in 1973 as a student, of course, and pretty much was lonely because I was far away from home and hung around at the Shell and saw the women running track and decided to walk on the track team. I'd never run before. And Peter Tagan was the coach then and worked with me. And that's how I got my start.
The rest is history.
That's for sure.
How did those first few months on the track team, how did that work out? I mean, you just came in off the streets. Was that common?
That's for
in those
sure.
days?
For myself personally, it was a challenge in that I had never participated in any sports. Pretty much in high school, I was a bookworm and studied a lot. And for me, it was quite a challenge in terms of the discipline that it took for both trying to keep the academics together and also the practice time that it took. I would say that as far as women's athletics is concerned, it was also a dawning of an age because at that point, we were not a part of the NCAA, I guess we were AIAW, primarily a club, it appeared to be. And we were in the formative stages in terms of our growth, but we prevailed.
In terms of the women's athletics angle, did you have an athletic director, a women's athletic director at that time? And what was, how big was women's sports in the mid-70s?
Okay, I think initially in the mid-70s, the athletic director was Elroy Hirsch. I think in the middle 70s, Kit Saunders Nordine became an associate athletic director. And quite frankly, I think that's when things really started turning around. With the advent of Title IX, there were more opportunities for women to participate in sports. And so we saw a little bit more monies poured into the programs that we were participating in. We got to the point where we didn't have to share our uniforms with the basketball team. We had our own uniforms. So things became a little better, I'd say, about probably the 1976, 77, the year that I was about to graduate.
The bottom line in so many things seems to be the almighty dollar, and it seems to have been the case with the athletic department as well. Let's pursue that just a few more moments. I know I've heard some stories about sharing jerseys and track shoes and
That's
things
for sure.
like that. Let's just tell me about some of the financial hardships that the women initially faced in their quest for equality in sports.
Well, it's funny because I don't know if we realize that we were at a disadvantage because the sports or women's participation in sports was so new. Particularly for me, who had not participated in sports at all, I was happy just to have the opportunity. It's my understanding that for women that had participated in high school, there may have been a keener sense of the disparity in the dollars. But for me, to have to share shoes and to have to catch the station wagon or get to the next meet in the station wagon of one of the teammates' mother was just a way of participating in the sport. again, for some of the women that had participated in high school and had seen some other levels of financial commitment by their schools, it may have been somewhat of a hardship. But for me, it was fun. It was part of the system. I didn't realize that at that point we were at a disadvantage.
Could you just relate, for the record, the story about how the exchanging of the shoes and everything? I think that's just wonderful.
Oh, well, not only did we change shoes, but we also exchanged uniforms. I remember there being only one set of uniforms, and the scheduling had to be such for the track team and the basketball team, such as we both were, that timing had to be just such so that we would have the uniforms on one weekend and the basketball team would have the uniforms on another weekend. Shoes were another thing. I remember a time when we had to share our shoes, not only our flats, but our spikes. It was funny because there were even times when it was as close as the next race. You had to make sure that you completed your race and made it back to the starting line so that the other person could put on the spikes. So it was quite a challenge. Peter always kept a bag full of spare shoes, and he would fill them with tissue paper if they were too big. Quite a different time, that's for sure.
That's great.
Not the Nike era.
Talk about Peter Tagan for a little bit, will you? What kind of a coach was he and person was he?
Peter Tagan was my first and only coach. And, of course, that makes a difference because when he spoke, there wasn't much to do but ask, when do you want it done? In my opinion, he was the most important factor in my success in track because he knew all that there was to know. Initially, we had communication problems, and I always get a little laugh out of this because my coming from New Orleans, and I think he had been in the country maybe 2 years. We were certainly from very separate parts of the world, and I remember times when he always kids me about this and says, don't tell that story. But I remember times when he would try to relate to me as a non-runner how many yards I was to go or how many feet he wanted me to go in a particular training exercise. And I would have difficulty understanding what he wanted me to do. And I remember one particular instance when he wanted me to run something like a 60-yard and then stop, and I couldn't understand what he was talking about. And so he says, just run 60 shoes. Do you understand that? And from that, we began to communicate. He's a great coach. He's a terrific person, patient, understanding, and a lot of talent in terms of what he knows in training.
You said whatever success you had, you attribute a lot of your success to Peter. Let's talk about your success for a moment. You ended up being a pretty successful athlete. Talk about some of your races and some of your finishes.
I remember starting out running the 60-yard dash. Because I had never run before, we decided, or Peter thought that it was best that I stick to the shorter races. And I was fairly successful in the 60-yard dash. He moved me later to the 100, and I started running in the 100. I think I may have won a Big Ten championship in the 100 in 1 year. I remember my biggest fight with him was running when he decided that I should run the 220. And I resisted that because I thought, oh, wait a minute, he's getting me ready for the 400-yard dash. I could see that coming a mile away. But his training was such that my preparation was fantastic for the 220. And I was also successful in the 220, ran some very, I would say, modestly impressive races at that time for someone that had not had any training, any prior training or any prior experience. But 60, the 100, the 220, several relays. We traveled to several different places where I had the opportunity to run relays, and we were successful in our relays.
Did he ever get you to run the 400?
I think maybe one time I ran the 400, and I ran it as a part of a relay, and I think I remember losing my lunch afterwards. So from then on, he decided that, you know, only in a pinch would I run that.
Well, as a former high school track athlete, I was not a runner. I was in the field events. But when we had to run those 440s for time, it was the most excruciating experience of my life.
Indeed.
It's the longest sprint in the history of track and field.
Indeed.
Anyway, moving on. What about some of your teammates? Any interesting insights?
Oh, I had great teammates. They were wonderful.
So let's start over again.
Okay. I had great teammates. They were wonderful. I remember it starting out as a friendship. And again, that was my whole purpose of joining the team, because I saw a camaraderie there that was unparalleled in terms of being able to fit into a university that was quite huge. But I remember teammates such as Randy Burke, who was here from the very beginning, a quarter miler, I think Madison native, who took me in as a little sister and just really showed me around and took time with me. I remember Cindy Brimser being a part of my team. I remember Pam Moore, another Madison native, being a part of my team. Bonetta Williams, Pat Johnson, all wonderful women that were committed to what they were doing and apparently quite successful at it also.
In a sense, you were at a real pioneering age in the history of women's athletics here on campus. As pioneers, sometimes you have to suffer certain hostilities and resentments from other people. Sometimes not, sometimes you do. What about your interaction with the men from the men's track team? Was there any problem because you were entering the field at this point, or was there?
I don't recall any problems with the men's team. I think that Peter, and at that time Dan McClyman, I think, was head coach of the men's team, and they worked wonderfully together. They made it a point of letting us know that we were representatives of the University of Wisconsin, and that was what was important. And again, as athletes, there's kind of an ability to transcend any type of animosity once you're on the field and once you've got that common goal. And quite frankly, I don't recall there being any animosity, at least not with the track team. There was sometimes periods of times when the baseball team would practice in the shell and the balls would come zipping around that caused some problems in terms of our training. But other than that, I think as a whole, the athletes were a pretty close-knit family.
Now, when I've studied the history of athletics here some, and I remember that in the 50s, as late as the early 60s, some of our black track athletes would be discriminated against in other locations. They wouldn't be allowed to stay in the same hotel, and there'd be all kinds of problems that developed because of that. As an African American, did you suffer any form of discrimination either in Madison or on the road as a result of your involvement in the program?
As an African American female running track at the University of Wisconsin, I cannot recall suffering any discrimination in terms of accommodations. There's something about being an athlete, and I don't want to be presumptuous in saying this, but there's something about being an athlete when you travel at this point in time. Now, certainly in the 50s and 60s, it may have been different, but at this point in time, in the 70s, there was something about being an athlete that people accepted the fact that you were there to perform, And I can't recall any different treatment that I received as an African American that was different from my teammates, not in the 70s.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, because some of the early examples were really
I've heard
really
about
surprising.
Them. Yes.
Let's turn to your involvement. We're doing fine. Let's turn to your involvement on the athletic board. How did you get hooked up into becoming a member of the how and when and by whom did you get roped into this?
Well, I still haven't figured it out. I think it has something to do with my being perhaps the first scholarship athlete at the University of Wisconsin. I remember having a very close relationship with Kit Saunders, and I also remember meeting Chancellor Shalala some years back, and I think that the combination of the two realized the commitment that I had to the university and the interest that I had in intercollegiate athletics, and perhaps that was the combination that steered me toward the athletic board. But quite frankly, I still haven't figured out how I was honored and chosen to be a part of that body.
I'm going to have to backtrack now because of something you said. You said you were the first scholarship athlete. Tell me a little about that.
Yes. Again, in 1973, we ran under the banner of, I think, AIAU or AIAW. It was only in 74, I think, that we became a part of the intercollegiate NCAA organization. And at that point, I think, with the advent of Title IX, scholarships were offered to women in athletics. And I was one of the first women that was offered a scholarship. And it helped me to complete my education at the university.
With your 2 years on the board, you're certainly getting a different look at athletics. You're kind of top down now.
That's for sure.
And bottom up. What do you see as some of the major challenges facing well, first of all, university athletics, and then if you want to go into women's athletics as well, that'd be fine too.
Okay. Some of the interesting things that I see facing university athletics in general is the different attitudes that the athletes bring to the table. There's talk now of pay for play, which would have never, ever come to the table in 1970, but there's somewhat of some thinking that an athlete, because of the kind of monies that they're bringing to the university, should be paid over and above whatever scholarship money they're getting to play. I think that the issues of gender equity have really become an issue on our campuses, not only the University of Wisconsin, but our campuses in the nation. There's a review that was done, or a committee that was formed to review Title IX, and that committee met May 9th of 1995. And it is really a look at Title IX as it relates to intercollegiate athletics as a whole. Apparently, there's a feeling now that the Title IX Act is depriving men of certain opportunities to compete. And there's this big discussion, and I'm sure you'll see and hear more about it, as to whether or not Title IX is overly inclusive, or whether or not it's gone beyond the initial boundaries that were thought for it. And I find that to be interesting because, again, Title IX was supposedly enacted so that women could have more opportunities to participate. And there's almost a unified attack at this point from men's athletics and some other groups that you're gonna see a good look-see at Title IX from now on, and it'll be interesting to see how that comes out.
Yeah, that's a very delicate balance, the relationship between men and women. I'd hate to see them end up sniping at each other.
It is unfortunate.
Yeah, very unfortunate. Okay. I started listening to you instead of doing my job of thinking of the next couple questions.
That's
here.
Okay.
What about non-income sports? How are they going to fare in the? How are they faring now? What do you see as the future for them?
Well, my personal opinion is that the concept of non-income sport has to be looked at from another perspective. First of all, the concept of non-income, or non-revenue producing, is a misnomer because more than likely there's been no concerted effort to market those sports in terms of attempting to see whether or not they could or could not become revenue producing. So I think there's got to be some attention given to the marketing of those sports so that we can really see whether or not they will produce income. They perhaps will not produce the type of income that football and basketball are producing, and that's because there's a history behind football and basketball of marketing and getting the viewer, the TV viewer, to the point of wanting to pay to see those types of sports. But I think if some attention is given to the non-revenue sports in the way of marketing, that you may see a change in, if nothing else, that that classification of non-revenue. I think also that the non-revenue sport offers an opportunity for students to participate in athletics. Everybody's not going to be a football player. Everybody's not going to be a basketball player. But there are students that want to have that experience of participating in athletics, and the non-revenue sports provide that. And from that perspective, I would think that athletic administrators are going to have to put a little bit more emphasis on looking at those sports and making sure that they are available for students to be able to compete in.
Perhaps a good example of what you're talking about is women's basketball here at UW in terms of the last year. Could you just talk about the success that's come about in the women's basketball program?
Oh, the women's basketball program has had tremendous success. And it's been a combination of a marketing technique or an attempt to market on the part of the University of Wisconsin, its program, and a combination of the new coach and her ability to reach out to the community and interest young women into the sport of basketball. And again, not only are women interested in coming to the basketball games, but you've got families that are interested. It's a sport that you can bring a family and have an outing. And you're absolutely right. That's a perfect example of a quote-unquote non-revenue sport that could certainly be turned around if there were some marketing strategies put forth and some opportunities given for expanding the perhaps the need to make this sport a revenue producer.
Talk a moment, you're on the board right now, it'd be interesting, the arena question. How is that going to benefit, how is that going to benefit UW sports, do you think?
Well, right now, the university, the field house, I think seats maybe, 7,000, if that. We're talking about an arena that doubles that capacity. If the enthusiasm and the success of our team continues, I think that it could be a tremendous boon to the University of Wisconsin and the state, for that matter. It is a multi-purpose arena, which means that not only athletic events could be held there, but concerts and family outings. And from that perspective, I think that the university, again, as well as the state, could greatly benefit from having the multi-purpose center.
summarize, we're running a little low on time on a few other areas here. Summarize in one to two sentences, if you could, Wisconsin's Rose Bowl game two years ago.
Summarize, one of the greatest times that I had in Wisconsin athletics. It's difficult. It was great. It was the Cinderella story come true. It was an opportunity for the University of Wisconsin to get on the map in terms of its athletic abilities. I think that it's always been there. We've always had good students. We've always had good athletes. But we stepped up a notch in terms of our ability to compete on a national level. And we were successful. It was great. I enjoyed it tremendously.
I couldn't talk for 2 days afterwards.
It was great.
What do you see as the future for UW athletics and women's athletics?
I think that the University of Wisconsin's intercollegiate athletic department has its work cut out for it in terms of trying to be a pioneer, if I might, in balancing the gender equity issue with having a program that meets the needs of all of its student athletes. I think that the nation as a whole, in terms of its intercollegiate athletic programs, are struggling with that issue. And I think that the University of Wisconsin has a tremendous opportunity to put forth some ideas that will have an impact on the future of intercollegiate athletics as it relates to participation for all genders, for both men and women, and for student athletes as a whole.
I have one more quick question. Anything from up in the booth? You came here to see winter.
Yes.
That was 1973. It's now 1995, and it's 22 years later, and you're an attorney in Chicago, is that right?
I am an attorney in Chicago.
Are you still excited when winter comes?
The first snowfall is always fun. I always wake my husband up and say, it's snowing, and he's from Evanston, Illinois, and so he always says, I know about the snow, go to bed. The first snowfall is always fun for me, being from New Orleans, but it quickly fades. When you've got to slosh through it a couple of days, the joy fades.
Well, I think on that rather somber note, we'll end it. That was wonderful. That's
oh,
great.
Good. I'm glad. This is my first time doing it, so I hope
so.
Well,
you fooled me. your ability to put things in context was...